Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your callers from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. With us this evening is Derek Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Derek, thank you so much for being with us. Oh, let's see. Let's find Derek here. There we are. Hi, Derek. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. Good to be here with you.
Well, Derek, of course, is certainly one of the researchers for World Affairs Brief. And if you don't go there every morning to find out what's going on in the news throughout the world, you're certainly not going to get the truth out of the newspapers or off of television. But Derek and his brother and their team of researchers researches the whole world, so you'll have it at your fingertips when you go to www.worldaffairsbrief every morning. And with that as a background, Derek, what are we going to be talking about today?
Well, we're going to be going over some of the bigger stories that we've had in the last little while. Of course, probably the biggest story domestically here has been the uncovering of Deep Throat and the story behind Watergate. So that will take us back into history a little bit, of course, but and kind of review some of the issues there.
All right, fine. That sounds a good place to start. So, what's your take on Mark Phelps coming forward and admitting that he was Deep Throat?
Well, we've been hearing a variety of things over the last week or so as this admission has come forward. In the first place, the establishment press is just reveling in the fact that that it was W. Mark Felt who is admitting that he was the legendary Deep Throat. And, of course, Deep Throat is the FBI/government insider who leaked the details of the Watergate break-in to the Washington Post reporters Bob Woodward and Cal Bernstein. And as we see this story unfold, we're reminded of that drama that occurred way back when about Watergate and the bringing down of President Richard Nixon. Now, you know, I'm not a big fan of President Richard Nixon and his legacy. He had a lot of skeletons in the closet, like most presidents do, and they sold out a lot of the principles that that he got himself elected on. But one thing you have to say for Nixon was that what happened in Watergate wasn't necessarily his fault. There was definitely an establishment that brought him down and convicted him of something that is essentially commonplace within the government and within both political parties, spying and lying. It happens all the time.
I agree with you, but of course the thing is that he got caught at it, but it was like there was a feeding frenzy. They were intent upon bringing him down. And, of course, what was his crime? I don't know that he was necessarily involved in this from the very beginning, but once he, of course, it got underway, why he lied to cover for his friends, Haldeman and Ehrlichman, and it was really the cover-up that got him into so much of a problem. However, we know that the President, Bill Clinton, lied. You never saw a feeding frenzy by the media to bring Bill Clinton down because he lied to the American people, and he lied under oath, and he obstructed judges, justice, and he tried to get people to perjure themselves. You never saw that feeding frenzy on the media to bring down Bill Clinton. So why was there such a feeding frenzy to bring down Richard Nixon? Not a likable person. Lots of things about Nixon that he might very well have been impeached for, but Watergate was the least important.
Well, that's right. I agree completely with what you're saying, Dr. Stan, about how commonplace these activities are, spying, lying, and cover-ups. are just a standard modus operandi for anybody at these levels of power. And it's been standard for, you know, for as many presidents as we've been able to uncover the facts about. And in fact, I don't think that there's a single president who hasn't had to work in a variety of backroom ways and with strategic leaks and strategic cover-ups to maintain the presence that they feel that they need to control power. And it's not the key, though, to understand, I think, in all of this, is that the president is part of a larger system in which this spying and covering up is taking place. The covering up is going on in a much broader cloud than just the president himself. And that was the real scam of what Watergate was. In fact, it was using Nixon as an example of covering up, when in fact the whole Watergate process itself was a cover up for a variety of activities, and was in fact a method by which the establishment itself could strengthen its role. So, go ahead.
No, I want to get your take on what really happened. Why were they so intent upon getting Richard Nixon? Because they were out to get him.
Well, they were definitely out to get Richard Nixon, and as usually, there are probably a variety of reasons why Richard Nixon was particularly chosen to be brought down. And I think one of the most useful things to do to understand that is to go back in time a little bit to the real reason towards the beginning of Richard Nixon's rise to power. And we have to go back to the trial of alleged communist agent Alger Hiss, who was eventually convicted of perjury. Now, Alger Hiss comes up quite a bit in the discussions on those tapes that Watergate was so much a big deal about, the tapes that were recording what was going on in the White House. And Alger Hiss was a big point of discussion because it was, in fact, kind of the claim to Nixon's fame. Now, the key to understanding this is that Alger Hiss was brought down, and he was convicted of aiding communists and brought to the attention of the prosecutors by...
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Derek Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and I was asking Derek why he thinks that Nixon was brought down. There was no question that there was an effort to get Richard Nixon. Not that he wasn't a scoundrel, not that he hadn't done some terrible criminal things and been involved in all sorts of criminal activities. Remember that somebody gave him $100,000, I think it was a fellow named Vesco, to try to buy get a pardon for a crime he'd committed, and Nixon was so dishonest, he kept the money and didn't get the guy a pardon. I mean, talk about, most politicians, when they're bought, they stay bought. Why, Richard Nixon just took the money and used it to try to buy off the people in the Watergate scandal, and that got into the strange death of Howard Hunt's wife and all of that sort of thing. But the question then was, why were they so interested in getting Richard Nixon? And Derek takes us back to the early days when Richard Nixon was simply a member of the House of Representatives and part of the investigation of Alger Hiss, who was a highly placed government official. He was the man who drew up the United Nations Constitution, the UN Constitution. At the time when he was accused of having been a communist agent, he was the president of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, one of the most powerful think tanks, left-wing liberal foundations in this country, really directing American foreign policy. And, of course, now this man has been accused of being a communist, and, well, I'm going to let you pick up the story there.
And those facts are very key to understand about Alger Hiss and his relationship to Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was the man who brought down Alger Hiss. Now, who was Alger Hiss? Well, the facts that you mentioned are very key to understanding the real person behind the government agent that Alger Hiss was convicted of. Yes, he did help manage communist infiltration into government for other long-range purposes. But his was very much a New World Order kind of a person. His activity as being the principal author for the United Nations Charter and his activity with the Carnegie organization was are a list of a variety of facts that indicate that he was a key player in developing the New World Order, which is, of course, growing and has continued to grow since then, and has is working very hard to control so many of the activities in our government and other governments across the world.
And of course, when Hiss was actually charged, he had character witnesses like Secretary of State John Foster Dulles, Secretary of State Dean Acheson, Felix Frankfurter. They were all character witnesses for this man, who was obviously had worked as within the communist movement. So why were these people giving character witnesses? Some of the leading globalists in our country, all of the members of the Council on Foreign Relations, as was Alger Hiss, were all, of course, giving recommendations that this man couldn't have been a communist. He was such a fine, upright individual. And here is little old Richard Nixon, congressman, you know, brings down Alger Hiss. So you pick up the story.
So Alger Hiss was, in fact, more of a globalist than he was a communist. And this was something that started to show up that that Nixon was very confused about at the beginning, because he thought that that Hiss was just a regular old communist. But he didn't understand that Hiss was part of the controlling organization that had so much influence in getting him elected to office and would, in fact, bring him down later on. And so Nixon fought against some very strong oppositional powers by the globalist establishment while trying to convict Hiss. During his presidency, he would regularly refer back to his fight to convince Hiss when he was confronted with all kinds of people problems from the administration. In fact, let me read quickly a quote by Nixon from the tapes that he was talking about. He said, "We won the Hiss case in the papers. We did. I had to leak stuff all over the place." Interesting that notes that Nixon knew how the ways the government operated in terms of leaking things. He says, "I had Hiss convicted before he got to the grand jury. I no longer have the energy, but we need someone who can play the game like we're going to play it." So this was fascinating to see some of these excerpts from the Watergate tapes that showed how Nixon learned through the Hiss trial how the establishment really worked, and he leveraged that to become part of the presidency. And it was while he was in the presidency that he learned how to manipulate all of these things and cover up and spy and lie, etc., which he was eventually brought down for.
Well, I think it's a fascinating insight into the demise of a president, but they can get rid of any president they want to. This is the thing with the power of the media. Why it's very, very easy to control the reality of the American people. In fact, in his book, The Real War, and I think Nixon wrote that about 1980, he talked about how, we aren't ruled by the people in Washington, D.C. We're ruled by the people who control the media. And they actually shape the ideas of the American people. And the people who actually are on the television every evening and giving the television news are the ones who really run the country. I'm sort of paraphrasing what he says, but that comes from Nixon's book, The Real War, and we do have that exact quotation for any of our listeners who'd like to get it.
That's right. And so all of this starts to point to the fact that that Richard Nixon betrayed the establishment globalists in convicting Alger Hiss, and this was something that he should have recognized. He talks later about how Hoover himself had told Nixon that he was ordered not to cooperate with him.
Now, who could order the head of the FBI not to cooperate with Richard Nixon unless there's somebody who really is far more powerful than both the president and the head of the FBI, who really is running things from behind the scenes?
That seems so obvious to you and I, Dr. Stan, but apparently it wasn't obvious enough to Richard Nixon. And so he went ahead and continued to force through the conviction of Alger Hiss. And apparently Alger Hiss was prominent enough in the globalist case that the globalist establishment never forgave Richard Nixon. And so when Richard Nixon became president and became a potential liability, he was enthusiastically brought down through the Watergate processes.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and then, of course, the question is, why didn't Mark Felt, or at least his family, come forward at this time? You know, was it simply a matter of money? Was that what it was all about, do you think?
Well, there's a variety of factors, I think, that are going to play here. Money may be an issue. You know, Mark Felt is getting older. He's had a few strokes. He's probably needing some expensive medical care and other things. So money may be an issue. But in reality, I think that this is a time to bring him out. This is a time of a relative jubilation for the leftist media, and they've been really working this story to the hilt. They're really reveling in kind of what it was their glory days, which was Watergate. The ability of the leftist media to bring down a Republican president was just something that they relished back then, and was certainly kind of their glory days. It brought them into power in a way that they never seemed to feel that they had before. This feeling by the Washington Post and the New York Times and others in the leftist press who were patting themselves on the back that they could bring down the President of the United States was just a tremendous boost to their egos.
Well, I think that people have to understand that certainly the Washington Post was owned at that time by Katharine Graham, a member of the Bilderbergers. The people who control the New York Times come from the Bilderbergers, this group of international elitists that are so powerful that up until this last year or two, they've been around since 1953, neither the Washington Post nor the New York Times would ever mention the word Bilderberger. Only recently, in this last year or two, have they even mentioned it. Why? They're so. Where is the investigative reporting? There is none. And if the people who control those newspapers hadn't wanted to bring down Richard Nixon, why, it never would have happened.
That's exactly right, Dr. Stan. And because of that, and because of what we see having happened over the last 30 years, and how the power of the media press has grown so much stronger, especially by the leftist controlled media and the globalist establishment, it has been strengthened, in fact, by the Watergate test. I believe that there are two other important reasons why Richard Nixon was chosen to be brought down by the Watergate cover-up scandal, even though the actual charges of Watergate were just par for the course. And the first reason is the fact that the process of bringing down a president by the media, as opposed to assassination, which is how they brought down John F. Kennedy, when the establishment brought down John F. Kennedy, they did it in a fairly direct way. They needed to figure out how to bring down a president through a more complex system, through the press and others. And so this exercise was a powerful strengthening effect to the global establishment.
I agree with you. It's always been my feeling that Richard Nixon certainly knew about the plot to kill President Kennedy, but then of course so did Lyndon Johnson. But of course neither one of them were brought down for that reason. In fact, we have an interview with Lyndon Johnson's mistress. It's on our JFK assassination update, where she tells about the meeting the night before JFK was killed in Dallas. And of course, attending that meeting were not only J. Edgar Hoover, but Richard Nixon and Lyndon Baines Johnson. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Derek Skousen, from World Affairs Brief, giving you an overview of what's really taking place behind the scenes. Well, Derek, where do we go from there?
Well, so we were talking about the three key reasons why, just kind of summarizing this, discussion of Watergate. And the three key reasons why Richard Nixon was chosen to be brought down at that time and through these things. And to summarize, basically, I believe that Richard Nixon was brought down, one, because he betrayed the global establishment by convicting Alger Hiss, and two, by the process of bringing down a president without assassination and through the manipulation of the public by strengthening the press, created a intensified structure of the global establishment to control presidencies, which brings us directly to the third reason, that by bringing down a president without just assassination techniques, but by bringing him down through the press and in a humiliating manner, they were able to set a precedence of control for all future presidents who would be elected, and to be able to point to the real powers that how Washington works and how it could work in the future if any president decided that they were not to acquiesce to establishment globalist ends and goals.
I think a very, very good point. And of course, you remember shortly after Ronald Reagan became the president, why there was an assassination attempt on his life. Who was the assassin? Why, it was the son of one of the vice president's closest friends, a very close friend, the son of a friend of President, Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush, formerly the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Perhaps just a coincidence, perhaps not. So, where do we go from there, Derek?
Well, let's move on a little bit. Let's cross the Atlantic a little bit and talk about the other major story of this last week or so, and that was the rejection of the EU Constitution by the French and Dutch in the referendums that they had there.
All right, I think that is such a vitally important event. In fact, it could very well be almost a watershed event for our time. It's going to be very interesting to see then what is going to be done to try to rejuvenate the European Union, because certainly world government is the basic thrust of almost everything going on today, creation of a world government and a new world religion. And, of course, to create that world government, the plan was to consolidate Europe, to consolidate the Western Hemisphere, to consolidate Asia, probably under the leadership of China or China and Japan. And here, after spending over 50 years, really closer to 60 years, going back to 1945, working for a European Union, France and the Netherlands both reject the European Constitution. So you pick up the story there, because I think this is a very, very important event.
I think this is important for us, for everyone, especially here in America, to understand the trend towards the growing control over a variety of nations and the undermining of those nations' sovereignty that we see happening in the European Union is being played out and is being created as a pilot program for world government. And so it is critical for us to understand here in the United States how sovereignty is undermined and how these processes might roll forward. And it looks like it's rolling forward in fits and starts, as it may be. And we are seeing that in this rejection by the French and Dutch of the EU Constitution.
Hold that thought for just a moment when we bring our stations right on board. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Derek Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and we're going now to switch over to the defeat of the European Constitution, not only by the French, but by the people of Holland as well. And, of course, both countries rejected the European Constitution, France by a vote of about 55-45, and then the Netherlands, I think it was 63-37%, an overwhelming defeat, of the concept of the European Constitution. So when this is left up to the people, they don't embrace the internationalist dream of the rulers of this world, who really want a world government under their control, and of course a new world religion under their control as well, because religion then would be simply used to control the people. And now, suddenly, after almost 60 years of incessant work to unify Europe, why these common peasants have voted against the dictates of their rulers. And I imagine that the people of great wealth in Europe who have been pushing this idea of creating a new European Union, which is really going to be sort of a feudalistic state under the control of a ruling elite, but under any circumstances, the people have rejected it. So what's going to happen next, Derek? Where do you think we go from here?
Well, there's a variety of directions in which it will go. I mean, basically, the European Union movement will have to retrench and back up their plans a little bit. We may, in fact, see some political fallout. This is probably some pretty bad timing for the politicians in Germany who are in power at the moment. Their hold on elections has been a little bit tenuous, and we're seeing some weakening there with this vote. There are a lot of there's a variety of different kinds of fallout, a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, you could say, among some of the major politicians in the key EU countries. This is recognized by them as, you know, their own fault. This was essentially a major miscalculation by Jacques Chirac and all. His calling of a nationwide referendum on the EU Constitution, which the French voters soundly rejected, was simply a miscalculation. It was the same in Holland, in the Netherlands. Neither government was required to put this as a vote to the people. They debated it for a while in terms of whether or not they would put this up for a referendum.
But they try to do everything under this guise, oh, this is democratic, this is what the people want, we're simply the servants of the people, without, of course, this is all for show, it's all part of the illusion. Indeed, of course, the people are to serve their masters, and they think they elect them, but the elite control both political parties and make mockery of this concept of democracy.
That's right. They make mockery of the concept of democracy, and yet they leverage the principle by playing lip service to democracy. This ability for them to put forward this kind of mockery of democracy as a vote for the people under a referendum is practically a Machiavellian technique that would allow them to justify a variety of further ills later on as saying, yes, we've done this by the will of the people, when in fact it had nothing to do with the will of the people. The EU Constitution was a highly manipulative document that, if anything, undermined the individual rights and the ability for people to escape from the control of an oppressive government.
Well, they'll probably have to bring over some American voting machines that will be able to, of course, to direct the course of the next election, so it'll be done much more wisely. In fact, it really doesn't matter how you vote. It's who counts the votes that's really important in a democracy. So it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds.
Yes, it really will be interesting to see how it unfolds. And it'll be especially interesting to see the next little bit as some of these major countries go through some re-election processes, like in Germany. The Germans have been talking specifically about the EU and how important it is, and there's some disconcerting language that they've been putting out threatening the vote there and how that would go wrongly for that direction.
Well, of course, already, of course, they're even over there, whether it's anything will come of it, but they're even talking about the possibility of doing away with the European currency, which is a very important part of unifying Europe under one government. Control the currency while you control the people. And, of course, the European currency is having a terrible time. You have a central bank over there that has to set one interest rate for everybody. What Germany, of course, needs to lower the interest rate somewhat to get their economy going. Certainly, you need to really lower it dramatically as far as Italy is concerned. And, of course, you need to raise it as far as Spain is concerned. What do you do when you got one country? Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, and Derek Skousen from World Affairs Brief. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens over there. But, you know, for the first time we're hearing, and whether anything will come of it, about the fact of the possibility of just abandoning the euro, abandoning the whole idea. And I don't think the elite is going to let that happen under any circumstances.
No, I don't think so either. In fact, I would be surprised if anything significant really changed after all the hullabaloo starts to calm down. There's simply no teeth behind any of the discussions that I've seen so far about taking away the euro, about about changing some of the policies, about breaking down some of the control factors of the EU, or even letting some of the controversial countries who are slated to become part of the EU, like Turkey, be turned away. I would say that if anything, this activity has delayed the rollout of the EU plan overall, and has set it back slightly. But I don't see anything that would say that it has changed it significantly. I expect that will be a flurry of rhetoric, which we are already seeing, and that that rhetoric will bring up issues and give people lots of things to pontificate about, something for the Italians to wave their hands in the air a little bit more vigorously than usual, and I think it will blow over, as so many other things blow over in terms of the EU. And in terms of these globalist missteps that happen, you know, when the establishment and globalists are not perfect, they make mistakes all the time. That's the primary reason why folks like yourself, Dr. Stan, and others like my father Joel Skousen know so much about the globalists and their intention is because of the mistakes that they make in their cover-ups, etc.
What's that old saying about the best laid plans of mice and men and the establishment sometimes goes astray? All right, fine. Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how this unfolds and how it plays out. And the important thing is that maybe we've bought a little bit of time. And our whole goal has to be educated people about not only about the plan for world government, but the dark spiritual forces which are energizing this entire plan for the new world order, the new world religion.
And that's one of the big reasons why the plan will keep rolling forward, and that the only real dissent is...
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Derek Skousen, and we're talking about what's happened as far as the vote against the European Union Constitution by France and by the Netherlands. And Derek thinks that this is not going to change anything. There's going to be a lot of talk, a lot of sound and fury, and then why they're going to continue going as rapidly as they can towards this goal, irrespective of how the people feel what the people want. But at least this may give us a short period of time to continue our effort to try to educate people about not only the political, geopolitical, and financial interest, but about the spiritual interest behind this whole move towards the New World Order, the New World Religion. Okay, where do we go from there, Derek?
All right, well, there are a variety of stories that have been coming out kind of all over the world, and maybe we can just... briefly touch on a few here and there.
Well, maybe before we do, we should give you a chance to tell our listeners how they can, first of all, go to World Affairs Brief. Secondly, how they can get a copy of the World Affairs Brief, the weekly edition you put out. And finally, how they can subscribe to help support you if they so see fit.
All right. Well, firstly, the place to go to keep up with the news that we're pulling from all the other news around the world to watch what's going on is to go to www.worldaffairsbrief.com, and you'll be able to see plenty of reading material there and things to click on, and we're just trying to make it a good place to get a daily overview of the kinds of things that are going on throughout the world. And it's not just the domestic news and the local news that is of interest to people and is necessary for people to understand about life anymore. We need our personal lives at the local level are being affected by news at the global level. And so to collect that global news is one of our goals here at the World Affairs Brief.
And you do a great job of it.
The second thing that you mentioned is getting a copy of the analysis that we make of all that tidal wave of news that happens on the Internet and elsewhere. And the way to do that is to call a toll-free number, which is 877-518-5888. That's toll-free, 877-518-5888. And if you call that number, they will mail you a copy of the news analysis, basically the same analysis that I'm using as discussion points here this evening. To get that analysis on an ongoing basis, go back to the website at www.worldaffairsbrief.com and click on the subscribe button, and it'll walk you through the process of how you can receive that analysis every week in a timely way. I get it in my email, and it's one of the better ways to keep in touch and to keep a tab on what's going on.
Yeah, so do I, and I. It comes in, and you just push the button and print the thing off, and then you've got it. You read it through and analyze what Joel is looking at as the most important stories of the week. So, well, where do we go from here?
Well, let's touch on a couple of different stories. The Bush White House last week was stung a bit by Amnesty International as it released its annual report, and top of the list on that report of assailed the U.S. and its practices of torture and abuse and continued confinement, especially without trial of, as the Bush administration calls, quote-unquote, enemy combatants. And so Amnesty International, that leftist organization, has given some pretty fierce critique to President Bush, and it's pretty significant critique because, in fact, Amnesty International is widely seen by the press and is fairly well regarded by the variety of socialist nations in Europe, which Bush is trying to patch things up with.
And I think it's pretty hard to defend what we're doing. For instance, the government says we disapprove of torture, we would never go along with torture. And then they appoint Alberto Gonzalez to become the Attorney General, who is the man who okayed this whole idea of torturing the people and doing these terrible things to the prisoners as long as they were not considered enemy combatants. And, of course, we're the ones who determine whether they're enemy combatants or not. And so, you either support torture or you don't support torture. And obviously they say we don't support it, and then they put Alberto Gonzalez in the key position, and almost nobody gets punished. Enlisted people get punished for what happened at Abu Ghraib, to my knowledge. Nobody has been, punished for the humiliation of the Muslims there at Guantanamo base. And, of course, this is getting tremendous publicity, is being used to inflame the anger and hostility of the entire Muslim world against America. And if you wanted to inflame the Muslim world, you couldn't do a better job than we're doing. And, the government says we would never condone torture. And yet, there have been story after story after story about the CIA having their own airline and flying people that have been captured to Egypt or to Syria or to Jordan where they can be tortured. Now, we didn't do it. Why the Egyptians and the Syrians and the Jordanians, they were the ones who did the terrible torture of the people, but we're above that sort of thing. Well, what happened to America's high moral standard? We have lost the high ground. We've lost the moral Christian foundation that once made America the envy of the world. And people look at America and say, that's what Christians are. And I think every Christian listening to this program and every American should hang their head in shame. Why aren't we out in the streets demonstrating like they do in other countries when their government lies and specifically lies, says one thing and does exactly the opposite? Everybody knows that they're not telling the truth. We knew it happened under Bill Clinton. But we were all indignant about Bill Clinton. We cheered when they were going to impeach this man, not because of Monica Lewinsky, but because he was so corrupt and dishonest. But can we say we have less dishonesty in the current administration?
That's right. The dishonesty is rampant, and it's relatively blatant. You know, Bush's statement regarding the Amnesty International thing during a White House press conference said, "I'm aware of the Amnesty International report, and it's absurd." And that's pretty much what he said. But absurd, he might take issue with maybe some of the criticisms, but the details in that report are very factual. They go on and on. Amnesty International talked about how Guantanamo is the obvious case where the U.S. has been operating an isolated prison camp in which people are, as Amnesty International says, confined arbitrarily and held virtually incommunicado without charge, trial, or access to due process. Not a single Guantanamo detainee has the legality of their detention reviewed by a court. So, and Guantanamo is just the obvious part of thing. I mean, that's something that you'll even see in the regular press. But what you don't see, and things which Amnesty International were able to point out, was that the evidence continues to mount that the U.S. operates a network of detention centers where people are held in secret in Afghanistan, in Iraq, all over the world. And Amnesty also noted, as you mentioned, about the fleet of secret aircraft that fly prisoners to other countries so that the other countries can torture them on behalf of the United States.
Well, let me play the devil's advocate. I mean, don't the Islamic people do terrible things too, and haven't they killed some of our prisoners?
Well, yes, they do. and that's the question is do we as Americans support would Americans support us doing the same thing?
Do two wrongs ever make a right? That's right. Do two wrongs ever make a right? And they will use this. They'll say, well, look how terrible the Japanese were to our prisoners during the Second World War. And we're nowhere near as nasty to the people we're holding as the Japanese were. And they keep bringing up all of these other issues. And where is the cry, we've lost the moral foundation, we've lost the high ground that America once stood upon?
That's right. And what's essential is that people understand that the U.S. government is not representing America's interests, that the patriotic fervor that people are going out and supporting President Bush with, based on the 9/11 and other fight against terror that people are so wound up about, is in fact all of a facade. And it is so, it is going to be such a crushing disappointment when people realize that they have not been the good guys in this war, that we have been the bad guys in most cases in this war, and how disappointing it will be, and how frustrating it would be as this comes to light. And so it is critical that the news gets out to set the expectations properly so that the disappointment isn't entirely demoralizing to this great nation.
Amen to that. I agree with you totally. And, you know, I look back on Vietnam, and I hate to say, but during the early stages of Vietnam, I was solidly behind the war. After all, we were fighting the enemy. We were fighting communism. It wasn't until I realized we weren't trying to win the war. It wasn't until I realized we were financing the North Vietnamese, which is acting as a surrogate for the Soviet Union, that we were giving aid and trade with and massive loans so that they could have enough money to build the aircraft, to supply the North Vietnamese, to use the aircraft to shoot down our planes. We never tried to win a war. It was as phony as a $3 bill. And 58,000 Americans and 3 million Vietnamese died. And let's just fast forward to where we are today. Who's financing the insurgents? It takes a lot of money to keep this insurgent war going. Because a lot of these suicide bombers, they're paying their families a good deal of money. You know, of course, that's one of the rewards for being a suicide bomber. But who's putting up all that money? Where is it coming from? You know, you can't be moving money around either in Iraq or any place else in the world without our government know where it's coming from. And I've been told it's coming from Saudi Arabia by people who've been there. It's coming from Syria. It's coming from Iran. And there's much to make me think it's coming from other countries as well, like our good friends in communist China, who, of course, will use the Islamic terrorist movement as a surrogate. But be that as it may, I mean, where is the outcry from the American people? You know, that we justify doing what we're doing to continue this war and keep it going? One day the people, of course, right now who are supporting the war are going to have to ask themselves, was I correct in my support for the war when it was being waged in an immoral fashion?
Yes, and that support will be so disappointing and so difficult. And the fact that disappointment is something that the establishment can use later on to help control truth as it goes out. Because people don't want to believe that they've been the bad guy over the years, and so that will only add to the strength of the cover up activities as it goes forward. And so that's why, you know, shows like yours, Dr. Stan, are so critical for helping to uncover these things in a way that that people can understand how this direction is going and why things are happening the way they are. And so that they can understand where the fault should be placed correctly. And so I certainly applaud the efforts that are being done at this radio station.
Well, thank you so much. Well, let's go to Area's calling from Redwood City. Hi, Area. How are you doing?
Hi, good evening. About the vote on the EU, the French vote, I was reading that one of the main reasons that they rejected it was they felt that it favored the free market and the businesses and the free trade too much. Almost reminded me of the anti-globalist sentiments on the left that we have in this country. And so I think all they have to do is promise the people that there'll be sufficient government controls, and they'll try it again and probably get the people to go along.
Well, we're just going to have to wait and see. How would you respond to Ari's remarks there? And certainly we saw both the right, I should say both the conservative and the liberals were opposing this. That's one reason they got into so much trouble.
Yes, and in fact, Ari brings up an excellent question when he was talking about how the far left, and when we're talking far left in France, we're talking very far left. These are Marxist and communist organizations out there. Who were really part of the organizations that opposed this EU constitution, and what we need to understand is that both the right and the left, as you said, Dr. Stan, were against the EU constitution and for different reasons, but underlying them all is this feeling of insecurity, because the communists, they wish to be in power as well. The left and the communist left in the European countries is a little bit different from the left here in the U.S. The left here in the U.S. is actually very much part of a globalist and socialist activity, whereas socialism is fairly mainstream at center in countries like France and in Holland. The left in France and Holland are kind of the leftover parties from the other side of the Cold War, and they are actually not part of the globalist establishment. They are operating on their own agenda, and they are feeling betrayed by the globalist agendas, and are seeing their power being undermined on the other side of things in the same way that the right is seeing. The power of the individual being undermined. The communists are seeing the power of Marxism being undermined as well. And so the fight goes on both sides, but the communists are and the left in Europe is being manipulated by the globalists in this case.
Okay, anything else, Gary?
Well, a comment also about the Alger Hiss and Nixon. I would agree with you that him convicting Hiss would have been a good motivation for the establishment to try to get rid of Nixon, but the problem I have with that is the long time delay involved. If they wanted to get rid of Nixon, they could have done the same thing they did to Barry Goldwater. They were able to marshal public opinion against him, even though he was a lot more popular than the outcome of the election in 64, you know, revealed. And they allowed Nixon to get to become elected president. He did everything they wanted for a term and a half, or a little, you know, a little over a term. And so it doesn't quite make sense why they waited so long.
All right. How would you respond to Ari's concerns there?
Well, that's a great question. And that, in fact, is why I gave the three key reasons for picking Nixon and the timing. That one, it was Alger Hiss. Two, the bringing down a president by means of the press strengthened the establishment in a way that they couldn't have done otherwise. And four, they needed a president that they could take down in that way to show that future presidents were under control of the establishment.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Ari. Bye-bye. And we're going to go to Theodora here as soon as we'll get Theodora's question in just a moment when we come back. But anyway, one more time. Do you want to get that telephone number out where people can get the World Affairs Brief?
You bet, Dr. Stan. That's toll-free, 877-518-5888. Or 877-518-5888.
Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Theodora on the line. Hi, Theodora. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. And I'm sorry, I didn't hear the whole show, so I hope I'm not repeating anything. But one of the most encouraging stories I read in the paper this week, and I think it was from Associated Press, was talking about how parents of high school kids are taking a very active role and telling the recruiters to stop coming after their children. And it had quite a few details of places where PTA parents were standing up when the recruiters were on campus and actively, you know, actively saying, you're not welcome here. And I think that's, you know, when you talk about people rising up and not supporting this illegal war, when the parents don't let their young kids be picked off by the recruiters, that's a very, very good sign.
And I certainly agree with you. You know, the thing is that they're going to have a draft. As someone said recently, oh, America can be the lone superpower in the world, or America can have an all-volunteer army, but America cannot have both. And of course, I would rather have an all-volunteer army of people who are dedicated to defending America and do away with our internationalist goals and stop this war, because this has nothing to do, in my estimation, with fighting Islamic terrorism. So how would you respond to Theodora, Derek?
Well, I'm glad that Theodora brought that up. I think that's a great story, and I think that parents should be learning about the activities that are going on in Iraq and in other places of the world, and understanding more and more about what the U.S. is really representing out there, because there are still a lot of patriotic parents who are encouraging their children to be involved in things that to be honest, I don't think those parents would want their kids to be involved in if they knew what was really going on.
I agree
and
with
so it. to see this coming out of other parents who are learning more, it encourages me. It encourages me to hear that more and more Americans are understanding the key aspects of what's going on in the world.
Theodore, anything else you
well,
want to
let
say?
Well, can I just mention a quick website that I came across? It's called Main Street Moms Operation Blue. I don't know much about it. I just discovered the website, but it is moms organizing to protect their, you know, their moms of high school kids who are organizing nationally to block the recruiters coming into the schools or calling them at home and whatnot, to educate moms that we do have a right to say no to these recruiters. And it's www.themob.org. So if there's moms out there who want to get active, that would be a good place to start.
Bye-bye, and thank you so much.
And thank you, too.
Well, Derek, we're going to have to let you go. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to having you on our other program later this week.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
Bye-bye, and God bless. Okay, fine. Well, for our listeners out there, and I'm sure that many of you actually support the war, you think it's a patriotic thing to do. You think it's patriotic to support our country. Well, I support our country. but I do not support immoral wars. And I hope that if you have any question about war, you'll get a copy of our syllabus entitled Iraq, the Untold Story. That's Iraq, the Untold Story. You really need to get that, and you need to read it through. It's a syllabus, and hopefully you'll get the video as well. And it simply takes you through all the wars of the last century, through the Spanish-American War, through the Boer War, through the First World War, how America was drawn into that war by deceit and deception, and, of course, the propaganda techniques that were used, and it was all lies. And then, of course, how they got us into the Second World War. And you say, well, but what about Adolf Hitler? Wasn't he a terrible man? Yes, he was a terrible man, but he was financed and helped by people right here in the United States. And, of course, he was deeply involved in the occult, as were the people on our side as well. In fact, you'll get our latest newsletter. We point out that Winston Churchill demanded that the prosecutors at Nuremberg not bring out the occult and black magic and seances that the Nazi party was involved with. Why? Because Winston Churchill himself was a Druid and was deeply involved with Masonry and the occult and the One World Government movement that had no loyalty at all to Great Britain, but to this internationalist dream. So you need to get our video, Iraq, the Untold Story, and to get our syllabus by the same name. Now, if you doubt what we were talking about earlier about the control of the media, we carry a very interesting book. It's called The New Media Monopoly. And it's written by a professor up at the University of California in Berkeley, probably a left-wing professor. And but he's done a great job in chronicling the background and the fact that five mega corporations dominate the American media. That's The New Media Monopoly. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get the more information about our ministry, if you'd like to get the information about the material we're talking about, if you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, which is, of course, the April newsletter, why the April newsletter goes into the background of the Vioxx scam, the fact that Merck Company knew before the drug was ever released, according to an 090 study, and I simply, of course, have taken the testimony of Dr. David Graham, who risked his life and his career to testify before the Senate to tell the American people the truth about the murderous intent of the people at Merck. And I say murderous because they knew before they ever released the drug, according to their own study, 090, that it increased the incidence of heart attack sevenfold. And yet, the FDA knew that, and Merck knew it, and they released the drug without a warning. Why would you do something like that, unless you were inherently evil? David Graham's testimony before the United States Senate is the very essence of our April newsletter. We'd be glad to send you a free copy without charge. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet on various networks. You can listen to our archive programs. You can note that we do carry the Berkey water products. If you have fluoride or impurities in your water, we have all sorts of videos and tape sets, and we give you our permission to copy those. You know, as long as you're not making a profit on them, we want you to get that information out across America while we still have time. So again, our website, radioliberty.com, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. And we'll be back here in just a moment. But for those who are leaving, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back here in just a moment with Orlean Krula of the Eagle Forum here in California with an amazing, amazing story. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Orlean Kula from the California Eagle Forum, and she is, of course, lives up in the Santa Rosa area, and she's leading the fight in that area to try to return some sense of morality and sensibility and sanity to our educational system. Now, you must understand the purpose of education is not to teach our children, because if the purpose was to teach our children, we wouldn't have so many young people today graduating from college who can't pass the rudiments of English or mathematics to get into college. Our children are not being educated, to be able to compete in the world, because when we compare our children scholastically with children from other countries when they graduate from high school, our children are so far behind the other countries, we're down around 15th or 16th out of 16 in many issues, geography and mathematics and physics and things of that sort. They have intentionally dumbed down our children. The purpose of our educational system is to destroy their sense of moral values, their love of country, their love of family, and specifically their love of God. But they've done such a wonderful job of destroying their morality. I mean, when I went to school, abstinence worked. Why? We might have one pregnant girl in a high school graduating class of 200 or 300 or 400. Out of a wedlock, marriage was very unusual in those days. And then, of course, they brought in sex education. It was specifically designed to destroy the morality of our children. They knew what had happened. They knew exactly what had happened when it had been brought in over in Sweden. I remember when they brought it in 1955 and 1966. And they said, oh, no, this is to help children. It's to cut down on those unwanted pregnancies. But the whole program was designed to increase unwanted pregnancies, to destroy the modesty and embarrassment that young people would feel, to corrupt the morals of our children. And you can see this today. If you go down to the store to buy something for clothes for a 14 or 15 or 16-year-old girl, and you look at the jeans, they're all cut very low so that the crotch is so cut so high that, the jeans come way down over the hips. And then, of course, the shirts that you can buy will always leave the midriff uncovered. That's what they're trying to do. All of these things make our girls look like streetwalkers. They're trying to change the perception, to make girls feel that it's chic to have out of marriage, sex. 25% of all white children in this country today are born out of wedlock. 75% of all black children are born out of wedlock. There is the end result of an educational system that has succeeded in destroying the morality of our children. Orlean, are you there?
Yes.
All right, we're going to be back with Orlean Kula in just a moment, and we're going to be talking about the amazing things that are going up in her area, and, of course, how she and a group of people are trying to do something about some of the programs that are being instituted in the schools in the Santa Rosa area. And you must understand that the people on the other side, many of them know exactly what they're doing, because they have a different worldview. They have a different vision. They want a different type of America. They certainly do want one where there are any moral standards, or chastity, or fear of God. Well, Orlean, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are and what you're up against up there in that area?
Well, I am a substitute teacher, for one thing, so I definitely see everything you were talking about in our public schools. The changing in dress standards, it's just appalling to go in and see the girls with their low-cut tank tops and short shorts, and as you mentioned, the low-cut waist, and they wonder why they are treated like streetwalkers when they are dressing like this. It's just incredible. And of course, some of the poor boys who are trying to not look at them and maintain their concentration on any studies, it's very difficult. Schools have tried to change and have dress codes, but for the most part, that is not working in our area. Anyway, what has happened in Santa Rosa, about a month ago, Elsie Allen High School received permission from our Santa Rosa School Board to be able to give out contraceptives at their school-based clinic. And this was done without hardly any notification. They said that they met with parents at the high school on three different occasions, but one of my friends who is part of the parents group there said hardly anyone knew about those meetings. So maybe 50 parents were at these meetings in total. And the other thing is, before they voted on it, one of the members said, I will vote for this only with the condition that all of the high schools and middle schools in Santa Rosa will be allowed to also come and get their contraceptives at Elsie Allen's clinic. So, in other words, it's now affecting all of our school district. We have at least four big high schools, five big high schools, and probably 10 middle schools, and ages 12 on up, without any parental notification, the kids can now go get contraceptives. And these consist of the morning after pill, condoms, the Depo-Vivera shot, and some of these things are really scary. The morning after pill, I understand, causes bleeding in some cases, and someone has even died from it. So anyway, that's what we were up against, and some of us were there at the school board meeting and spoke out against it, but it was like it was already decided before we even spoke. So I am the state president for Eagle Form of California. I'm also the Sonoma County president, and we are leading a campaign to get people to sign petitions showing them that there are many parents who are upset about this, hoping that they will change their policy and stop this procedure at Elsie Allen High School, but also go back to a true abstinence sex ed program.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Arlene Kula, who is the state president for Eagle Forum. She's also the Santa Rosa chapter chairman of Eagle Forum, and of course at one of the schools, one of the high schools in her area. Children from 12 years of age on will be now able to get contraceptives, condoms, Depo-Provera shots, the morning after pill, and of course they can donate, not only come to that high school, but children from other high schools can come and get the contraceptives. Now, what sort of response are you getting from parents, you know, when they're told about these programs? Are any of them incensed at all? Are they just saying, well, gee, we just want to go along with that after all? We don't really want to tell our children how to live their lives.
Well, every parent that I've spoken to has signed my petition with the exception of one, and she is a sex ed teacher. And she totally believes in abstinence herself, but she thinks that it just doesn't work for all people, so therefore they have to teach contraceptives. And I told her, don't you think that's a mixed message the kids are getting?
Don't you think you're intentionally confusing the children?
Exactly. And it doesn't work. The kids, wherever this, they call it abstinence plus. I just wrote an article and sent it to the Press Democrat saying that it's a very little abstinence and a whole lot of plus. And the plus consists of sometimes an entire semester long of teaching the kids everything they would ever want to know or not want to know about sex, all about contraceptives, and no right or wrong.
And, of course, they have to have a moral foundation for life, and yet we've removed that from our schools. And, you know, the idea of telling children, well, you know, abstinence is the way you should go, but, you know, if you're going to be promiscuous, why, be sure you use a condom, is like, and I heard this on 60 Minutes, I thought it was so well said, where the gentleman who's in charge of this program, the absence program at the White House, had said, this is like saying to your son, look, or your daughter, you should not drink and drive. You should not drink and drive a car. But if you're going to drink and drive, be sure to wear a seatbelt. Now,
exactly.
Would anybody give that sort of a message to their children? And of course you wouldn't. You know, it's like saying, well, if you know how to fly a plane, you shouldn't drink and fly the plane. But if you're going to fly the plane, be sure to wear a seatbelt. You'd say, that's insane.
It is.
That's exactly the message we're giving to our children. You can't give children a mixed message. And when I went to school, and it was a long time ago, you know, but it was 60 years ago. But, I mean, the sex outside of marriage wasn't even considered. And they didn't talk about sex. And they hadn't broken down the moral values of our children. And they hadn't taken God out of our schools. And they hadn't taken belief in ourselves. We had a sense of pride. And we respected women. And that has all been destroyed. And it has been done intentionally. It's not a matter of our times. It was part of a long-range plan to destroy the moral fabric of our society, and you can go back and you can read the writings of Albert Ellis and the other sexologists of that time. Understand that so much of this was funded by the Kinsey Institute and actually funded then by the Rockefeller Foundation, which funded Kinsey's study, which is aimed at destroying the moral fabric of our society. Because, ladies and gentlemen, I hate to tell you, but there really are evil and wicked people in the world. And part of that evil, you know, centers around the misuse of sex. Sex is a wonderful thing in marriage. But we're not telling our children about that. We're just telling them, giving them a How to Do It book, and even providing all the tools for them. And then we wonder why we have 67 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease. 67 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease. And when I went to medical school, why, we'd never even heard of most of those diseases. So pick up the story there.
It's actually now 1 in 4 sexually active teenagers now have an STD. That is an enormous high rate.
And I think the sexologists have done a wonderful job, and I'm sure that Alfred Kinsey is just clapping his bony hands together in glee to see what his ideas have done to our people, and so are the people of the Rockefeller Foundation, who funded this whole thing.
That's right. And you can see from that high rate, obviously this sex education program is not helping in any way, shape, or form to teach them to abstain from sex. It's just the opposite. And the sad thing that's going to happen to them the rest of their lives, these STDs are something they can never get rid of.
Now, what was that old sort of a sick joke, but what's the difference between herpes and love? Well, herpes lasts forever. And it's a sick joke, but it's something maybe you have to use to try to get through to these young people, you know, to understand that once you've got it, there's no turning back.
That's right. The sad thing is for these kids in the center of the school district, however, they think now because the school board has condoned the distributing of contraceptives at LCLN High School, that obviously that must mean that these contraceptives are safe. Wherever such a thing has happened, the rate of promiscuity has risen, in some cases, by 50%. Maybe some of these contraceptives prohibit teenage pregnancies, but often their failure rate is still very high. But the STDs are going to skyrocket, and it's really, really tragic. So that's why we're trying to fight this as best we can.
Well, what sort of response are you getting, say, from the local newspaper and from the local radio stations?
Well, the local radio stations have been wonderful. I've been interviewed on the largest radio station in San Francisco, KSFO, and on one locally right here in Santa Rosa, KSRO. Our newspaper, of course, is giving the liberal viewpoint. In fact, in an article that just came out last Friday, they accused EcoForum of kind of being naive and not really understanding what's going on in the world. And the last thing they mentioned, they said, students, parents, and educators working together know better than the Eagle Forum what will help young people make the transition to healthy adult lives.
Healthy adult lives when 1 in 4 children is going to have a sexually transmitted disease that's going to be with them the rest of their life? Is that what's really good for them? Is that what the newspaper people want? And I would like to suggest, yes, there are really people who want this sort of moral depravity. They have a different worldview, and until you understand that, you can't understand how anybody could be as blind as these people are. They're not blind. They know what they're doing, but they don't want you to know what they're doing. So anyway, at least you, what sort of response did you get? Did you have open lines when you were on the major radio stations?
Yeah, oh, no, it was a, there were no people calling in, but the talk show hosts were very supportive. And also, the people have been wonderful in sending in petitions. Tomorrow I'm going to speak at the school board meeting again and turn in another 100 signatures. And we're just going to keep inundating them with petitions until maybe they will at least open this up for more discussion.
Well, of course, you have other people there helping, with other people in the WEGO forum helping you collect the petitions, helping you collect the signatures?
Yes, I just returned from a Republican Central Committee just about a half an hour ago, and they've all signed my petition as well and commended me for what is going on. And what is exciting, too, is the national coverage we've gotten. This was actually addressed on Fox News 2 weeks ago, and someone saw it mentioned on the Today Show with Katie Couric. And I keep telling the school board when this happens, I say, obviously, this is making national news because the majority of parents in our nation are shocked by any school board allowing such a thing to happen. According to various polls, it's anywhere from 70% to 90% of the parents of our nation do not want their children to be given contraceptives, and they want a true abstinence-based program in the schools.
You know, really, the only way you're going to counter this would be, for a drive for recall of the school board, and that can be done, you know, if you could just get enough people behind you and make this as the issue. These people are not fit to sit on the school board. They have to know what they're doing, and what a wonderful opportunity to get the information out, whether you win or lose. But I will tell you that sometimes, as Everett Dirksen said, Senator Dirksen, you don't see the light until you feel the heat. And the only thing to do with these school boards is simply to recall them. I know it's a lot of work, but it can be done. I don't know how many signatures you need, but rather than give them the petitions, and which they will ignore because they have their own agenda. But the one thing they fear is loss of power.
Well, one thing that did kind of get their attention the last time I spoke 2 weeks ago, I mentioned them to them, have you thought of the liability that you're bringing upon yourselves if one of these young teenagers takes the morning after pill and starts to bleed, as often is the case, and maybe even worse things happen? Don't you think the parents might hold you accountable because you approved this?
Oh, I think so, and I think that really what you need is probably to go to Broad Dacus at the Pacific Justice Institute and see what legal action could be taken, because, of course, if any one of these children gets pregnant, if any one of them gets, you know, complications of Depo-Provera, I'm amazed that they're using that. I thought that it had been pretty well banned in here because of all of the complications. Of course, we're using it in third world countries for those common peasants, but they usually don't use it here in America on our white kids. So, I would think that, there would be real complications, and because this can produce, many long-range endocrine abnormalities. So, I would think that there would be all sorts of reason to take legal action against them with actually, suits for compensation, because that's the only way sometimes you'll get a school board to do what's right.
That's really the truth. What is interesting, the reason they are doing this is because LCL in high school is in the part of town where there's a lot of Latinos that live, and in that zip code there were 156 births out of 1,000 Latinas, and they think that that's the crises that they need to cause this action to take place. And we of course don't even know if any of those kids are even attending the school, or if they will even come and use the contraceptives. So it's a strange reason to.
Well, of course, the thing is that that's the same rationale they used to bring the sex education in 1965 or 66. Look, there are one or two pregnant girls out of 400 here in every graduating class. And now, of course, in some high schools, a quarter of the girls graduating may be pregnant out of wedlock. These things, they know exactly what they're doing. They always have an excuse. But behind that, I believe there is another agenda. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call here at Radio Liberty. I'd like to know what you think. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and you know, it is amazing the length that the other side will go to of dishonesty, coming up with these studies that shows that abstinence doesn't work. Abstinence education doesn't work. Abstinence doesn't work. We've got to give the kids the condoms and tell them how to use the condoms. Well, one thing that Rush Limbaugh said, and I agree with him, and that is that abstinence works 100% of the time. And in schools where it's taught correctly, the incidence of pregnancy and sexual activity drops and drops dramatically. And they know that. And so they come up with these phony studies funded with, I think there's something like $40 million that the Bush administration gave to a guy who was determined to prove that abstinence didn't work. And although the Bush administration has given some money, to abstinence education, it gave something like $40 million to a guy, and his job was to prove it didn't work, and you'd never guess what happened. He proved that abstinence had almost no effect at all. Maybe it held off sexual activity for 6 months or so, but in the long run it didn't work. But, which programs was he analyzing? Were they programs were effective? Obviously they weren't. When the Bush administration will spend $46 million to push, on a program with a man who has an agenda, I think we certainly should ask ourselves, what is the real agenda at the national level? Well, what can be done? Are you going to be able to get enough signatures? Are you going to consider a recall? Are you going to consider getting legal help? What's the next step? Do you perhaps not want to say because you don't want to know?
I don't mind. We've spoken to Brad Dacus. We've also spoken to Scott Lively, and they have given us good advice. They've taken a look at our petition and approve it, and I'm sure if the time came, they would both be there to support us. We truly are trying to push for an abstinence program, a true abstinence program, and there are so many examples where they have been successful, and we have a wonderful group right here in Santa Rosa. We wouldn't even have to go very far. It's a group called Free to Be that was written up in the San Francisco Chronicle on May 22nd, a very complimentary article, and they actually have really nice, young, hip teenagers or young adults that come into the classroom and let them know that they are refraining from sex until marriage and how proud they are that they're doing this. And they make it fashionable. They make it popular. 2 years ago, Miss America had as her platform an abstinence program, and she went into all of the high schools and was very well received. So if the school will just be 100% behind this, I think they could make such a difference. There's a study that was done back east. This was it's a program called Heritage Community Services. They offered 25,000 students in South Carolina this program, and they had such success with it, a 42% reduction in sexual activity and in teenage pregnancies. And this is actually in the entire group, it was a 72% reduction. So it just depends how well the school board and this administration and the faculty will support such a program. In the letter that I gave the school board 2 weeks ago, I mentioned there's this great German philosopher by the name of Goethe who made the statement, treat a person as you want them to become and they will rise to it.
And they said we'll be back here in just a moment here with Orlin Kula. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is really a very important subject in my estimation because there is a conscious effort to destroy the moral foundation of this society. We talked about that in the last hour. What's happening over in Iraq today many times is being used to destroy the moral foundation of our society. But what are we doing to our children? We're telling them it's perfectly all right to promiscuous as long as you protect yourself. Well, believe me, the condoms do not protect you against chlamydia, They do not protect against hepatitis B. They do not protect against herpes. And they do not protect against human papillomavirus. And the people who are pushing the condoms, if they don't know that, why they should know that. But there's some people who do know that. As I said earlier, 67 million Americans today have a sexually transmitted viral disease. And, of course, these, will be with the people all of their lives because there is no cure for them now. Orlean was saying that she'd given a letter or at least a statement to the members of the school board. Would you like to repeat that that quotation from Goethe?
Yes, this was by the German philosopher Goethe, and he said, "Treat a person as you want them to become, and they will rise to it." And I'm trying to let the school board know if they will just treat these students with the expectation that they do believe that they're capable of accepting abstinence and making a pledge or living it until marriage. And this is made to be the popular thing. It's amazing the success that they've had in schools, even in California.
Did you suggest to them that they put in an abstinence program if they're really concerned about this skyrocketing incidence of out-of-wedlock pregnancies in the Hispanic part of town?
Yeah.
Maybe this would be an alternative other than suggesting to these kids it's perfectly all right to be promiscuous?
Exactly. I actually substitute taught in that school where the high rate of teenage pregnancy is, and it was in their sex ed class. I was actually there giving them their final exam. And before I gave them the final, I was supposed to show them this last video and comment on it and ask them questions about it. And the kids told me they were so sick of seeing videos like this and sick of this whole subject. It had gone on for a whole semester long. And I asked them, well, tell me, have you actually been taught abstinence until marriage, that is the only safe sex or the only safe method to prevent sex or prevent any of these viruses or AIDS or teenage pregnancies? And they said no. They had no abstinence taught to them. So obviously, even though the teachers say that they're teaching abstinence, maybe they say that for 10 seconds, and then they say, we know you're not going to be able to live that, so we're going to teach you everything about condoms and all of the contraceptives, and they make it so sex is actually appealing by some of the funny games they do. There's a condom race where they divide the class into two different groups, and it's a relay race to see how many people can put the condom on the banana the fastest. Is that teaching anything about abstinence? Not at all.
Well, Orlean, I'm sure you realize that there really are people who want to destroy the moral standards of our kids. I mean, you could not do a job this poorly and intensely. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I know a lot of people out there in the listening audience probably sick and tired of this subject. Well, I don't especially like to have to bring it up either, but I think it's such an important subject because I believe there is an organized, orchestrated effort to destroy the morality of our youth. And remember, this is our future. And when 67 million Americans have a sexually transmitted viral disease, this is not simply a statistic. This is a terrible, terrible tragedy. And what can be done about it? Well, nothing's going to be done about it unless people get involved. And, of course, the first thing, if you have a child, you get them out of public schools. They do not stand a chance there. They will destroy their moral foundation. You will not be able to keep them from being taught things that you don't approve of. But, as far as the children who are in the government schools, then, of course, you have to do everything at all to point out exactly what is going on and that there really are people there who know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the parents to know. And, is there any way parents can get their children out of these sex ed classes?
Yes. Parents just need to take a strong stand. I got my son out. I actually pulled him out in the sixth grade because of what was going on in the elementary school. The kids could no longer sing any Christmas songs. They couldn't even call it Christmas, and they had to call it a winter holiday. And I'd already gone through strange things before, so I just said, that's the last straw, and I pulled him out. And when I did bring him back to school, public school, because we had three kids in college, and next year and couldn't afford any more private school. But I made a stipulation before I did that he would not have a sex ed class.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Orlene Kula, who, of course, is the president of the Eagle Forum of the state of California and, of course, of the Santa Rosa chapter of Eagle Forum. And she's on the front lines of this battle, collecting petitions, going before the school board with all sorts of alternatives. What sort of response do you get from the school board when you go there? Do you get sort of just, well, we'll give her a chance to say what she wants to, and then we'll go ahead with our agenda? Or do you think anybody's really listening?
Well, they meet every 2 weeks, and my first experience speaking to them was when we first heard about this, and that was the other thing. It was hardly even publicized that they were going to be talking about this and making their decision. So we had very little time to notify anyone. There were only 5 parents there who spoke against it, and most of the faculty from LCL and high school were there, all for it, and of course the people from this school-based clinic, and it was like they had already made their decision. I thought that maybe one or two might vote against it, but it's a 7-person board. They all voted unanimously for it. And 2 weeks later is when I turned in our first stack of petitions and spoke again. And they wouldn't look at me because I was, you know, kind of chewing them out. They recognized that. But when I mentioned the possibility of there being libel for a lawsuit, suddenly the eyebrows went up and they did look at me. So I think they are going to be checking on that, and maybe tomorrow when I go speak again, they will perhaps have decided if they're going to change this policy, or at least open it up for more discussion.
Well, I hope that you just will, just hang in there, because, of course, what they really hope is you'll just go away. You'll dry up and blow away. Most people do not have the tenacity to hang in week after week, month after month, year after year, decade after decade, because the people on the other side have an agenda. Their agenda is to corrupt the morals of our youth and destroy the moral and Christian foundation of this country. Now, you know, some people will get up and work for a period of time, and then, of course, they give up. People will, you know, work and organize and get onto the school boards, and then, of course, the other side will come in and spend fantastic amounts of money to get rid of them. The media will demonize them, and they just sort of wear good people down. They know exactly what they're doing, because the people on the other side are willing to dedicate the whole of their lives, because they have an agenda, they have a purpose, they have a goal. Until we're as dedicated as they are, and I know you are, Orlene, because I guess it's been 10, 15 years we've been in this fight together.
That's
maybe,
right.
Of course, I've been in this for 43 years now, 40, going on 43 years, but, you know, we can't give up. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Orlene Kula, and we're talking about the effort to corrupt the morals of the children in the Santa Rosa area, and that's really what it's all about. When the school starts handing out condoms, and of course giving Depo Provera shots, and of course giving out morning after pills, are they actually using Depo Provera there?
Yes, that was stated as one of the things they would be doing in the Press Democrat article the morning after the first school board meeting. Would you mind telling me more about that? I'm not even familiar with what that does.
Well, it's a long-term, it's a hormone shot. It's a long-term, and, you know, there are all sorts of problems that girls get into. They get excessively obese, and it's been sometimes since I've really studied it. It really upsets their whole endocrine and metabolic system, and I know at least at one time they were seriously considering discontinuing it here in the United States, continuing it in third world countries, for the peasants there and for the black kids, for the black children there, because, of course, it's very effective in population control, and of course I think it's a progesterone shot, as I remember, and it sort of tricks the body into believing they're pregnant already, so you can't possibly get pregnant if you're already pregnant. They stop ovulating, and of course you're not going to conceive where they're on it. The shot will last about 6 months, but you know, maybe somebody out there knows more about it, or can go to the computer and look it up, because right now it's been, I think 15 years since I really did much studying on the danger of Depo-Provera. But it is a shot, and it will last, I think, up to 6 months. So you can't possibly get pregnant, because you can get all the sexually transmitted diseases during that period of time, but at least you're not going to get pregnant. And when the young people take the shot, they honestly believe that they're not going to get the diseases with it. The child is not capable of believing that they're going to tell you it's perfectly all right to be sexually promiscuous now because we've given you a shot, without realizing, of course, that there really are people who don't care whether they get these diseases or not. The people are handing out condoms and telling them it's perfectly all right, just so long as you protected yourself. Don't tell them that condoms do not protect against chlamydia. They do not protect against herpes. They do not protect against human papillomavirus. I wonder how many of the kids in your classes really knew that.
And they do not protect against AIDS. The AIDS virus is so tiny it can just go right through the pores. Is that not true?
Well, it can. It will cut back on the incidence of the disease, but it will not prevent it, and certainly in... But even, you know, the problem is that even when you have couples where one person has the infection and the other one doesn't, and you tell them exactly what to do and you give them long instructions, you know, at least 80 or 90% of those couples, discordant couples, will not use a condom every time when they have intimate relations. So, you know, the situation is they know that, you know, giving them the condom is an invitation to be promiscuous. And many of these children are certainly not as well educated as many of the discordant couples are, who've taken class after class after class, and still a significant number of them do not act responsibly. So they certainly know that children aren't going to act responsibly. But they say, well, then it becomes their fault. No, it is the responsibility of the people who've told them it's perfectly all right to do that. And I do hope that, you know, that somewhere down along the line you can take legal action against these people on the school board. Because the only way that they're going to change their policies, when money's going to come out of their pockets, or it's going to bankrupt the school system, and then the people, the parents, are finally going to get unhappy, you know, because their taxes are going up, and maybe at that point they'll be willing to get involved. Maybe they wouldn't even be willing to get involved to save their children. But boy, when it comes to saving money, a lot of people are very idealistic. Let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing? Speak up.
Yes. Wondering what you or the guest would have regarding the United Nations and the World Health Organization, since, of course, they consider the children their greatest natural resource. What would be their position regarding STDs and the promotion of sex education and condoms? And are they involved in the promotion of these programs in the school system?
Do you want to respond to that at all, Arlene?
Oh, I believe that's very much the case. UNESCO is behind most of the changes that have taken place in our nation's education systems. And the whole thing, what you've mentioned about the lack of morality, that's exactly what they want. When people are no longer a moral people, they no longer really think about liberty. They don't take a stand for liberty. And it's also true when you no longer have your own moral restraints, and the government has to come in with more and more restraints and yet bigger and bigger government. That's why our founding fathers, especially George Washington, wrote in his farewell address that morality and religion were really the foundation of our form of government, the two pillars of our government, and when they're gone, then so goes our government. And people, it's really true, if you no longer care about morals, ethics, you don't have much desire to do anything about freedoms either. It all kind of goes all together.
I think that's well said. It was John Adams who said our form of government was made only for a moral and religious people. It would not work for any other. That was John Adams. And, of course, the people would destroy the moral fabric of our society because they don't like our form of government. They really want an authoritarian system with them at the lead, a feudalistic system. It was William Penn who said, those will not be ruled by God, will be ruled by tyrants. And America is no longer ruled by God. We've taken him out of our schoolroom. We've taken him out, of our courts. We've taken him out of our government. People, of course, a few of the politicians, pander and pay lip service to God. But don't ever judge a person by what he says. Judge them by what they do. And if they say one thing and they do another, if they lie to the people, just look around and see what our politicians are saying, and then see what they're doing. And then ask yourself, are these people really Christians? Let me just point out for Jack, the World Health Organization is part of the problem. In Africa, of course, they're encouraging condoms. They're encouraging sexual promiscuity. In Africa today, you go into a place like Zambia, 30% of the adult population has HIV. You go into South Africa, 35% of the adult population has HIV. You go into Botswana, 40% of the pregnant women coming in for their prenatal sex have HIV. That is a failed public health policy. The only place public health has worked is in Uganda, where they stressed abstinence and sexual morality and certainly abstinence until marriage and faithfulness in marriage. And the World Health Organization and the international organizations are doing everything they can to convince the people to start using condoms there. And the government in Uganda says, we don't believe in the condom message. It's the wrong message. And the World Health Organization is trying to get them to back away from it. In other words, they don't want a successful policy. They have, I believe, a genocidal policy. I think they're being very, very successful. And until you understand that in Africa today, the U.S. Census Bureau is monitoring the AIDS epidemic. That's the U.S. Census Bureau is monitoring the AIDS epidemic. If you doubt that, I get their reports on a regular basis from the U.S. Census Bureau. Why is the U.S. Census Bureau monitoring the incidence of AIDS in Africa and the incidence of death from this disease? Why, to determine how successful our population control program is. The major thrust of American foreign policy is something called NSSM, the National Security Study Memorandum 200. You can look up on the internet, NSSM 200. Pull it down. We do offer it through our ministry, but it's rather large and expensive. But you can get it off the internet. If not, you want to get it nicely bound, we have it. And it's put out in 1974, and the major thrust of American foreign policy is population control. And Jack, the World Health Organization and the CDC and the U.S. Public Health Service are all working in cahoots to make sure the AIDS epidemic continues spreading. They're not trying to end it. They're not looking to these children as our future. They're doing everything they can to kill off as many as they can, and as terrible as that may seem, there was a Dr. Gilchrist over in Africa who analyzed the fact that in 40% of the children, pre-adolescent children who are not involved in sexual activity, who were HIV positive, and 40% of their mothers were not HIV positive. So where did the child get the disease? Well, he said they must have got it from using dirty needles when they were being vaccinated. Well, I will tell you, I practiced medicine in South Africa. They didn't use dirty needles on the white. They didn't use dirty needles on the left. And the only other place you could have gotten it was out of the vaccines. Anything else, Jack?
Dr. Stan, there must be a money trail here, and I was wondering if there are major Wall Street Foundation banking families and taxpayer funds that are being funneled into those programs.
Well, we know that the Rockefeller Foundation funded Kinsey's work and is funding this whole population control bit, along with the Carnegie Foundation. And I can't give you the up-to-date figures. I'm not sure who's involved in it. But you're absolutely right. And you can go to the Population Research Organization, Stephen Mosier's group, and they could get you who is funding this whole population control bit today. But it's all about genocide.
Dr. Stan.
Yes, go ahead.
What is also interesting about these school-based clinics, it's almost like Hillary Clinton's socialized medicine through the back door of our schools, because the LC Allen Clinic is funded by Medicare and Medi-Cal, and It's open to the whole family, so not only do the teenagers come and get their contraceptives, but the parents can bring in little children and receive health care as well for them. And, of course, it's all free, coming from taxpaying dollars through Medicare. And health services that insurance companies pretty soon will no longer be able to compete with these free care services. And slowly we'll see more and more of our insurance companies fade away into the sunset as these school-based clinics take over, and we'll have the socialized medicine that, that Hillary planned all along.
Well, that whole thing was laid out, you know, I remember at least a decade ago. That was the long-range plan, was they were to set up these school-based health clinics that would, of course, wouldn't just treat the students, but would treat, you know, anybody who wanted to come to them. And how does this work? Did the school board really realize the implications of what's going on there?
I don't believe so.
Well, I think the only thing you can do, of course, is get the people educated and, you know, just replace those people on the school board. They have a fiscal responsibility to the people, and they've obviously failed them. And they're hurting the children. And I would simply ask them, why does anybody want to hurt children? Don't you know that these children are going to get these sexually transmitted diseases and you are responsible? Why would you want to hurt children? And, you know, I will tell you, that's the one thing they can't stand, is when you accuse them of doing exactly what they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want to hurt the children? Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jack, do you have anything else you want to say?
Last question. Just wondering, Dr. Stan, when I refer people to your program and the website, relative now to the MSSM 200 report, Is it possible for people to view that report on the website before they order it?
Well, no, because we don't have it posted on the website, but they can go to Google, and it's NSS. It's National Security Study Memorandum. It's NSSM 200, and they can go up to type that into Google, and it's posted up on the website, and they can read the whole thing there. And it's, if they want to pull it down off the website, more power to them. It's fascinating. This is the official government policy as of 1974. It came out over the signature of Henry Kissinger, that great humanitarian.
Yeah.
And, of course, you have to understand, our major goal is population control throughout the world. And that's what an AIDS epidemic is all about. That's why we're spending over $400 million every year. Helping to finance the one-child policy in China, helping to set up clinics all throughout the world where they're forcibly sterilizing women. They tried that with men. That didn't go over very well in India. That's why Indira Gandhi lost as the prime minister there. They literally drove her out of office because the men were so furious after they'd been sterilized. But most people aren't quite so worried when they sterilize the women. Talk about racism. Where are the feminists when we really need them? You know, they always talk about choice here in America. The Planned Parenthood. Choice. But when it goes to China, where International Planned Parenthood has a coercive population control program and a one-child policy where women are forced to have abortions and forcibly sterilized, why, where is Planned Parenthood when you really need them in favor of choice? Okay, thanks very much, Jack. Well, Orlean, we've got about 4 minutes. What thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, I would just like parents to know that if they're going to make a difference, they've got to get involved. Eagle Forum cannot do the battle all by ourselves.
How could people, if they wanted to get in touch with Eagle Forum, what could they do? How would they get in touch with you? Because they're really doing a great job.
Well, thank you. They can go on our website, which is www.eagleforumofcalifornia.com, all spelled out, and they can actually download this petition. Our webmaster was going to have a generic one where you could just fill in the name of your county or the name of your school board, also if you think that your schools might be doing the same thing. And we have on the petition 8 good reasons why we are so opposed to such a policy, and we cite some wonderful sources coming from medical authorities and different websites. One of them is we think the Ed Code is being violated. We think parental rights are being violated, especially when kids as young as age 12 are able to get these contraceptives without parents knowing anything about it. and we give the statistics for the high rate of STDs, and also there's other risks of emotional and psychological injuries. When a child gets involved in sexual promiscuity, of course their own self-respect goes down, and that's when they begin to then partake of alcohol and tobacco and drugs and sometimes try to commit suicide. So all of these things have ramifications that these school board members perhaps didn't even think about. And then we recommend true abstinence programs, and we give some good suggestions of some of them and where they could get information on them. So we highly recommend they're getting these petitions if they can, and to just keep abreast of what your school board is doing. I apologize, because maybe we could have made a difference if some of us had been more in tune and attending school board meetings before this happened. But, you know, you get so involved fighting so many battles.
But this is such an important battle. And don't criticize yourself. You can't fight them all. They do these things very, very quietly. The one thing they fear is that the parents are going to find out that they're out to corrupt the morals of their children. And, you know, the average parent doesn't want that. The average parent wants what's best for their children. But, of course, they do not understand that there really are people who have an entirely different agenda. And until people can begin to understand the mentality of the people on the other side, and I fought with them for years, and I'll never forget this one woman saying to me, "You don't understand, doctor. We have a different worldview." And I looked into her eyes, if I've ever seen evil, it was there. And I realized we did have a different worldview. Well, Dr. Stan, we have 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program, Arlene, and certainly I agree with you. Parents have to become involved. They have to know what their children are being taught. A lot of parents look at their kids and they say they're in rebellion. They don't understand. This has been programmed into them in their schools. Destroy the child's faith in God. Destroy the child's faith in the family. Destroy the child's faith in country. And what does that child have? He has absolutely nothing to live for. And then we wonder why so many of our young people have a sense of hopelessness. So what can the average parent do? You're ready to feel abreast of what's really going on in their child's schoolroom. What can they do as far as what's happening in the school itself?
Well, I recommend that the parents get involved with their child in elementary school, but stay involved in high school and middle school. If I were to do it all over again with my 6 children, I would definitely have homeschooled them. I'm so appalled at the things that I see now, and I know that we still have to stay in the battle, because 89% of our students are still in public school, and that's why I recommend even parents who have their kids out and are homeschooling, you still need to be involved if you want to try to save our nation and keep our freedoms. And I just think parents need to become aware. There are so many parents who keep their heads in the sand because they don't like what's going on and don't want to know about it. I had one mother tell me this morning, she told me how much she appreciated what I'm doing, but she could never do it. And she also said that number one in her life was being a good Christian. Well, to me, being a good Christian is keeping the freedoms of our nation. Otherwise, we won't have the freedom to be a Christian. We won't have the freedom to worship how we please. So we have to be involved in the freedom fight and the freedom battle, or we won't have our religion pretty soon.
And I believe that we are called as Christians to be involved, to be salt and to be light, and to speak out against evil when we see it.
Exactly.
And I don't think, of course, that that any Christian has the right to say, well, all I have to do is look after myself and my salvation. Because remember, you're going to lose your kids, and you're going to be held responsible. God did not give those children to the government. They gave them to the parents. And when the parent abrogates their responsibility and turns them over to a godless school system run by people who have an entirely different agenda, why, of course, should we blame the people with a different agenda? Or should we blame it on the parent who is just so busy and so involved with being a good Christian? They were unconcerned about the fate of their children. Orlean Kola, thank you so very much for being with us, and thank you for everything you do.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stan. Thank you for your great programs and for all the information you give us.
Good night. God bless.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and certainly we hope that many of you will want to get some of the material we have on education. We have John Stormer's wonderful book, None Dare Call It Education. We have Barrett Chose's wonderful book entitled The Brave New Schools. It was a takeoff on Aldous Huxley's The Brave New World, but you see, The Brave New Schools are part of the same program, where they're actually targeted the minds and the hearts and the souls of your children. And then, of course, we carry a four-tape set on education. We've got Charlotte Disobey's wonderful book on the deliberate dumbing down of America. That's the deliberate dumbing down of America. We have a four-tape set on OBE, outcome-based education. So, that is the book, None Dare Call It Education, Brave New Schools, the deliberate dumbing down of America, our four-tape set on outcome-based education. These things are all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, really to understand the motivation on the other side, why, first you need to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. You can get it by itself or with a video and an audio tape, and they all tell you exactly the same story. There really are demonic forces in the world today that are dedicated to evil. And what do evil people do? Why, they do evil things. They want to corrupt. They want to destroy. And if you doubt that, we have a wonderful video. We recommend it without reservation. It's called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And, of course, you will actually get the 3-hour or the 4-hour or the 10-hour version. They're all in video, and I think the 3 and the 10-hour are in DVD. So, but it's really a truly unforgettable experience, and you'll actually hear many of the rock stars talking about their allegiance to Satan, and they've actually sold their souls to the devil. And you may think that's funny, but it's really not funny at all. There really are evil and wicked people in the world. How do you understand the Holocaust? How do you understand the 60 million people who were slaughtered in the Soviet Union under Stalin and Lenin, and the fact that the media never mentions that today? How do you understand the fact that between 1958 and 1962, between 43 million and 46 million people were starved to death in China, and this is never mentioned by the American media? How do you understand that? Or that 11 years later, David Rockefeller returned from China and wrote an article in the New York Times in August of 1973 saying the social experiment in China, under the leadership of Chairman Mao, was one of the most important and successful in history. The social experiment in China, under the leadership of Chairman Mao, was one of the most important and successful in history. And between 43 million and 46 million people were starved to death in a four-year period, besides the other probably 60 or more million who were killed in the initial consolidation of power. But it was a wonderful social experiment. There are people who look at the world differently than you and I do. In fact, if you read David Rockefeller's memoirs, you find that his two daughters are Marxists who support Fidel Castro. Why would that be? And I'd like to suggest to you, ladies and gentlemen, that nothing is important as nothing as it appears to be. The quotation I just gave you on David Rockefeller's daughters comes from his memoirs. You can get it, David Rockefeller's memoirs. His two daughters are dedicated Marxists and supporters of the murderer, Fidel Castro. Nothing as it appears to be. Check out the facts. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day. RadioLiberty.com. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection until tomorrow. May the Lord be with you.